Welcome to the Shoulda Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up, Jeff Parles of ESPN Las Vegas will join us, and we will go over what is now a tied World Series, just as it was last time we talked before Game 3. Here we are headed into Game 5, and it is now a best of three for the World Championship. And boy, give all the credit in the world to Toronto. And this is a resilient team. It's one where, you know, look, I saw some people saying, wow, nobody picked Toronto, nobody gave them a shot. It's baseball. I wouldn't say that nobody gave them a shot. I didn't feel that way of, hey, they have a zero shot. Anyone can win in a short series. But at the end of the day, you got to pick somebody. And are you really picking Toronto? Were you really sitting there with belief that the Blue Jays were going to win? Or is that something where, you know, Blue Jays fans thought they had a chance, or, you know, people rooting against the Dodgers wanted to pull for the Blue Jays? At the end of the day, you got to pick somebody. It was hard to pick against the Dodgers. That being said, boy, the Blue Jays, regardless of what happens the next two or three games, and it probably are headed for a seventh game, I would think. Although with Snell, Yamamoto, Dodgers certainly have the capability of closing this out. But hey, we're down to a best of three, and certainly anything can happen. Just the resilience, and that's an overplayed word, kind of a cliche word, but sat here 3 weeks ago, they were up 2-0 against the Yankees in that series. The Yankees came back after the errors. Judge hit the homer. I felt pretty strongly the Yankees would win that game. We're headed for five. Nope. Jays in Yankee Stadium survived. Beat Schlittler. Move on to the ALCS. Before you can blink, they're down 2-0 in the ALCS. They're down 2-0 in Game 3. Down 2 runs in Game 7. They get off the mat there. And here they are, down 2-1. And of course, what an epic, just incredible Game 3 that I think people are still, if you stayed up to watch it, and that was a tough one if you're on the East Coast, yeah, you had to make kind of a bet. All right, at what point here do I turn it in and call it a night? I'm not going to score. I don't want to sit here for 23 innings and get no sleep whatsoever. But to get off the mat and be trailing again in Game 4, I mean, it was 1-0 Dodgers in Game 4. Just all the credit in the world to Toronto. They are once again a big dog here in Game 5. I don't think they're going to win, but that would be the only way. I mean, plus, you know, minus 217 for the Dodgers, and it's Snell versus Savage rematch of Game 1, minus 217, plus 174. I mean, it's an enormous split. Dodgers are favored. Dodgers are big favorites here. I don't have any play. A couple things I would look at from a betting perspective, I think it would have been crazy to think after Ohtani's Game 3 that if the Dodgers win, obviously it's Ohtani going to be the MVP. I don't know that it's 100% the case anymore. As a matter of fact, I feel pretty strongly it's not 100%. Ohtani is minus 160 now to be MVP. If he doesn't do anything, Games 4, 5, 6, maybe say it goes to 7, and he didn't do much on Wednesday, even though he pitched and he walked his first at bat and he's been on base a zillion times in a row, he didn't pitch overly well. I mean, final line is what, 6 innings, 4 runs? That's not enough. I mean, that's not really a positive. And if he goes, let's just say his last 4 games of the series are 4-for-23 or 3-for-23 or something like that, and a couple walks, he doesn't homer. Yamamoto, who pitched a complete game in Game 2, is now 20-1 to win MVP. Yamamoto can certainly steal it. I don't know Freddie Freeman at 25-1, who he's got the legacy, he's got the reputation, he hit the walk-off in Game 3. Can he possibly do something to steal? I'm not sure. I think if anyone's going to steal, it's probably going to be Yamamoto. So that's one I like, Yamamoto. Again, I know I gave out Snell. I know I talked about Glasnow at 70-1, so I don't love sitting here every time, you know, we do these, give out a different guy. But just if you had no bets, no pun intended, if you had no bets on World Series MVP and you wanted something, like where does the value sit right now? I do think Yamamoto at 20-1 is decent value, especially if Snell can win Game 5 and then Yamamoto can come out and pitch another, you know, 8-9 innings, shutout, one-run ball, something like that. It'd be hard not to give it to him. Again, that's a lot of ifs, but I do think Yamamoto at 20-1 is pretty live, which I wouldn't have thought or said going into to Game 4. Here's the other one I like for Game 5. Under hits for Will Smith. I don't know that I talked about this before Game 4. Ohtani under hits, they might walk him, give him the Bonds treatment. They walked him the first at bat, but that was, you know, they kind of went after him after a 3-0 count. Actually, the 3-1 pitch should have been a ball 4. And then the 3-2 pitch should have been a strike, but they called that a ball. So you got the two calls wrong. But after that, they went after him. And of course, once it becomes a 4- or 5-run game, either way, you're not going to just walk him every time. So I don't know that the under hits for Ohtani at plus 160 something is worth it, because the only way he gets the Bonds treatment is if he hurts you and does damage in the first inning, which would lose that bet for you. So I would stay off of that. But Will Smith is caught now 27 innings in 2 days in a row, or 27 innings in the last 2 days going into Game 5. that's a lot of wear and tear on the legs. And, you know, legs are a big part of hitting. Legs are a big part of everything. Just worry about a little bit of fatigue with Will Smith. Plus 140 to not get a hit. That is one I like. So Will Smith to not get a hit at plus 140. Yamamoto 20-1 World Series MVP. Those are bets I like. I still think the Dodgers win, but I'm at the point now where it's almost like the Pacers back in the NBA playoffs. I'm at the point where even though I'm picking the other team, I can't have it with a lot of confidence in just the nature of baseball. When you're talking a best 2 out of 3, who's better doesn't really matter. And Mookie Betts has done nothing for the Dodgers. You know, Freeman's gotten hits here and there. Hernandez has had his moments, but it doesn't look like this unbeatable juggernaut this last week or so, this Dodger team that you're starting to see a little bit in terms of cracks. I know Robert said after game 4 here, hey, we're going to reconsider rejiggering the lineup. Lineup might look different here in game 5. So got to enjoy it. Got to enjoy it. Game 5 on Wednesday night. Then Thursday we're off. Then game 6, Friday night, Halloween, and then a potential game 7, Saturday, November 1st. The season extending into November is very much on the table here for Major League Baseball. So with how game 3 went in a possible 7-gamer and the possibility of the Dodgers going for back-to-back and the Blue Jays going for the pretty big upset here, and by the way, this is not the miracle on ice from, you know, the hockey scenario where it's just like 30-1 or whatever that number was. I'm not sure what that number was, but you get the idea. This is not Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson. This is Blue Jays are like plus 180 dogs. This is not a monumental upset, but it would still be an upset. And I just think with the classic in game 3, a possible 7-game series here. And I think 2019 was the last time we had a 7-gamer in the World Series in baseball. Nationals Astros, which is a really good game 7, which the Nationals won. Haven't had one since, so I think we're headed there. I'm rooting for it. So should be a lot of fun. Again, Will Smith under hits and Yamamoto 20-1 World Series MVP are both bets I like. Before we get to Jeff Parles quickly here, I've talked about the Ravens to miss the playoffs a lot the last month, plus 375. Steelers plus 250 to make to win the division. And the Ravens are in action here Thursday night on the night before Halloween here, laying 7.5 to the Dolphins. I actually like the over in that game. I think with Lamar back, they'll get in the 30s. I think Baltimore is just not good enough defensively to keep anyone under, you know, 17, 20. I know the Bears only scored 16 points, but the Bears did average 6 yards per play, and the game ended with them being on the one. So, I don't know, like a 35-21, 35-17, 31-21, something like that. I think the Ravens get in the 30s. Probably like the Ravens team total over more than the actual game over itself, but over 15.5 is a play for me. And like I said, I've mentioned them plus 375 to miss. If you bet that, you can now take minus 122 at FanDuel to make it. I think with their schedule and how flawed and just mediocre the Steelers are, the Steelers kind of missed their window here to put them away. Only 2 games ahead of Baltimore. Still get 2 head-to-head. As long as Baltimore can stay healthy, keep Lamar healthy, start to get some of these guys defensively back, I think they'll probably win both against Pittsburgh, which would not only swing 2 games, but give them the tiebreaker, which is a half game. I think Baltimore wins that division. Minus 110 to win the division, minus 122 to make the playoffs. I mean, chances are, if they're going to make the playoffs, it's going to have to be through the division. That being said, you do get the security of why not just pay the extra 10 cents, and who knows, maybe they get a wild card at 9-8 or something like that. But I think independent of the bet before, I think the minus 122 to make it is a good bet. And if you took the plus 375 to miss, you can certainly earn off that ticket. And I get the sense that Baltimore is going to rally here, and that Pittsburgh missed their window to put them away. 5.5-point favorites against the Bengals on Thursday night a couple weeks ago. Steelers lost. They had a, 9-point lead against the Packers on Sunday night. They lost that. Meanwhile, Baltimore was able to win against Chicago as a 1 or 2-point favorite without Lamar. A toss-up game, they were able to win that. So I think things have worked here for Baltimore to get back in the mix and make the playoffs, as I mentioned, I think, on the Monday show. But again, I like the over Thursday night, and I do think Baltimore is going to rally, get off the mat here, and make the playoffs. So a lot of baseball, a lot of football. We'll see what Jeff Parles thinks. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, you can catch him, ESPN Las Vegas. He's a good friend of the show, and he joins us now, Jeff Parles. Jeff, it's a best of three now for the World Championship. How surprised are you the Blue Jays once again bounced back and tied this series?
What a resilient team, Will. What a resilient team where they look totally dead in the ALCS. Like, when they lose the first two in that series, I'm thinking, all right, this thing's going five. Seattle's going to make the World Series for the first time ever. My AL ticket was a great bet, and of course that goes down. And then after Freddie Freeman walks it off in the 18th inning, and when it seems like the sun's about to come up in your neck of the woods, Will, when that game three ended, it's like, well, this series is not getting back to Toronto. And the only way it's going to get back to Toronto is if Savage has just an epic showing in game five. Like, that was the only path that I saw. And then, you know, I got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, Bieber was great. It kind of felt like everyone just relaxed once Vladdy hit that homer early in the game. As soon as he hit that homer, it seemed like everyone just settled in on the Toronto end. And Will, I've even though, like, again, we're in a best of three for the championship, I didn't really buy the Blue Jays through the whole regular season. I didn't think they had enough pitching. I just thought, all right, I don't think this translates in the postseason. And I've been totally wrong this whole postseason. And credit to them. And they have a little more 2015 Kansas City Royal DNA than I realized, just with how difficult they are to get out. They put the ball in play. You do it without Springer in the lineup, no less, tonight, too. Like, that's the other thing that was impressive. Like, obviously, Vladdy's their best player, but George Springer's the guy who's been there, done that. Their most important veteran, and who the hell knows if we're going to see him again in this series? There's a real chance we don't see him again. So, look, if they find a way to win this series, it'll be unbelievably impressive. You and I were texting pre-series. I thought the Dodgers are going to win this in five. Obviously, that prediction's out the windows now. I credit Toronto. They have fortitude of steel, Mr. Hill.
Blue Jays, a little slightly bigger favorite than they were in Game 4 as we get a Game 1 rematch. Snell, minus 216 at DraftKings. Comeback, plus 174. That's just an egregious split. But total 7.5. Yeah, I know. Would you do anything with this game? Side, total,
no.
Or props?
No, I would steer clear. I guess he could go over if you wanted. But, I mean, this has been an over. I mean, Game 1 got out of hand with this matchup because the Dodger bullpen got lit up in the 9-run inning. I know Snell started it, but it was really the Dodger bullpen that made that thing balloon from a regular inning to that 9-9 spot. I don't know. I think that this kind of feels like a big time Snell. I'm going to contradict what I just said. Like, would it shock you if these two starters go six innings each and it's 1-1 going to the seventh? Like, wouldn't shock me wouldn't shock me at all. I guess it means it's a stay off then, right? Well, I still expect the Dodgers to win this series, but this sure as hell feels like this thing's going seven at this point. And November 1st in Toronto is going to be an agonizing night for everybody who's got rooting interest in that series.
Yeah, Dodgers to score first has been one I've liked here, being the home team, and we got good pitching on the mound, and you can get a scoreless top of the first. All of a sudden, it's Ohtani, it's Betts, who hasn't done anything here, by the way, but Freeman, Hernandez, Smith, you get all that thunder at the top of the lineup. So I'd probably go back to that. And this is kind of a two-pronged question. I don't think they're going to give Ohtani the Bonds treatment anymore, at least maybe, you know, going into the game. Hey, if he hits a home run early, you reconsider, but they pitched to him more or less on Tuesday night here in Game 4. So how do you think they approach Ohtani, and is there actually a scenario where the Dodgers win this series and Ohtani is not the World Series MVP?
Yamamoto, we'll take the second one first. Yamamoto throws another complete game to wrap up the series in Game 6. Like, that's the scenario, right? Where Dodgers win Game 5, Yamamoto legitimately either goes 8 or the whole way again, like he did in Game 2 and Game 6. That's your scenario where Yamamoto can steal this thing away from Ohtani, but he's the only one. If the Dodgers win the series, he's the only one who can possibly win the MVP if it's not Shohei. I think I think we have to throw out basically everything we saw in game three, right? That was like, that was such a fluky night across the board. Like 18 innings, a zillion guys left on, six guys thrown out on the bases as well. Like everything that happened in game three was a once in a lifer game. Like just the way it went. Like that was a once in a lifer game. And I think you have to throw out, I mean, look, Ohtani reached base nine times and then only got on in his first inning walk tonight, which, by the way, that was a hell of an at bat in the first inning. Not that it really made a big impact in the end by Tompain, where he totally blew the last two pitches of that at bat. AB, we're going to be tapping the top of our head next year for sure. But, you know, I wouldn't give it's early in games. I don't like the Bonds treatment. In game three, I had no issue with, at this point, saying, hey, he's got four extra base hits in his first four at bats. Like, I had no issue with Schneider just continually IBBing him and then an intentional pass in his last at bat. But I don't think we'll see that unless if we get into a scenario like we saw in game three. But it's definitely aided by the fact that Betts has done nothing in this series. Nothing. Like, that's why they're able to do it, because Mookie has been, other than this hit in his last at bat tonight, he's pretty much been an automatic out in this series.
And I thought it led to value in game four here. Ohtani playing his under hits, which opened plus 195 in some spots, plus 160. It's like, hey, if they're not going to pitch to him, maybe they pitch him the first at bat and they just walk him plus 160, plus 195, and it kept coming down. Eventually, it was a pick 'em basically by the game start. That there's a lot of value on the no. And then over stolen bases, if you're going to put him on and walk him four or five times, there's a chance he's going to steal a base or two. But again, that didn't come to fruition. I probably wouldn't go back to that in game five. The one I was looking at, Will Smith under hits is plus 140. He's caught 27 innings in the last 2 days. Don't you think the legs are a little tired? So that would be one I would play it. But I agree. Side total props. To me, it's a stay away. I think the Dodgers win, but I don't know. If you had a redo right now, it sounds like, I don't know, do you think they split the next two and then somebody in seven? What's your kind of revised prediction?
I'm still going to take Dodgers in seven, but I don't know how the Blue Jays are hitting Yamamoto in game six. So that's kind of where my head's at here, Will, where if this thing's going to go seven, Toronto's going to get game five, but I think the Dodgers, I'm still going to go Dodgers in seven. I don't see how the Blue Jays hit Yamamoto. Like, I just don't. He's just so freaking locked in right now. Like, unless Gausman can give you such an epic outing in game six and you beat the Dodgers like 2-1 or 1-0. I'll go Dodgers in seven. That'll be my revised pick. So just an extra
2019, the last time we had a game seven in the World Series, I think so, right?
2020 went six. 21 went six, 22 went six, 23 went five, and then last year was five. Yeah,
24 was five. 20,
So 2019, Howie Kendrick off the foul pole. That was it.
Yeah, and we got 3 in 4 years, right? Because 2016 was Cubs, Indians, that went seven. The next year was Astros, Dodgers, that went seven.
Yeah, and the Red Sox, Dodgers was only five. So, yeah, it was 3 out of 4.
3 out of 4, yeah. And by the way, Yamamoto 20-1 World Series MVP, enough to pull the trigger for in your mind?
I think that's worth a small bet. Yeah. He would have, it definitely would have got helped if he had actually had a 19th inning to pitch in game three. But,
for sure.
That's your scenario. Like if Ohtani does not have another homer in this series or another big time hit because the Jays are pitching around him and Yamamoto, like, again, I don't know if the voters are going to be intricate enough in order to do this. But in this day and age, if Yamamoto throws like seven, if Yamamoto ends up throwing 17 innings in this series, we'll just do that for example, okay? Let's say Yamamoto throws 17 innings, a complete game, and then an 8-inning masterpiece where Sasaki closes out the championship in a game six. I don't know how you deny that at this point. Like, I don't. Like, I really don't know how you deny a guy who, and again, an age where pitchers don't barely go five innings in the postseason, if he goes 17, 18 innings in a postseason series and legitimately wins two games on his own, I don't know how you deny that at that point, Will.
I'm with you. I think 20-1 is a good number, and my guess is by the time people listen to this, I think that comes down a little bit. I think that's a little.
I'm stunned. Long. I'm stunned. It's that much at this rate anyway. Will. I mean, he threw a complete game in game two. Like, come on.
Right, and if Ohtani, look, I mean Ohtani, it's hard, reached base or whatever a zillion times in a row, but here.
Like that's what makes it more difficult. Like you have to dethrone the best player in baseball, who everyone knows is the best player in baseball, and legitimately had the best game in World Series history in Game Three. Like that's what it was. Like four extra base hits and reaching base nine times. Like that's the best game in World Series history for a hitter.
Anything else on this series or game five before we talk a little football?
Nah, I think we said our piece. Again, I'll go Dodgers in seven when it's all said and done here, Will, which will be agonizing for our friends north of the border.
Do you like anything Thursday night? Ravens laying 7.5 against the Dolphins. Did you have a problem with the Ravens, the injury report? And injury reports have been a theme this last week across multiple sports, as we know. Did you have a problem with how Harbaugh and the Ravens handled it? Did you think they deserve to be punished?
Well, I don't care. That's my answer. Here's the deal. First off, this whole hullabaloo about this whole thing is completely nonsense and coming from the people that are anti-gambling to begin with from the NFL media circle. So the predominant one who's pushing it, Mr. Florio, is anything that can detract from gambling is going to be pushed by him. So I don't take anything he says that even remotely,
he's got a one-track mind when it comes to this stuff, man.
Yeah, no, there's no reason to pay attention when it comes to anything gambling related with him. There's just no point. But it's interesting on the front of that whole thing, because Baltimore covered all the numbers, right? Like they covered everything.
Oh, sure,
they covered them all.
With the Bears having first and goal at the one in the final minute, of course.
Yeah, covered all the numbers. It's a little bit, especially in a sport that like the injury report, like forget the gambling portion of it for a second. Like forget the gambling portion of it, Will. Let's talk about the fantasy football portion of this too. Like you and I are kind of away from that, but there are people who play fantasy football, set their lineups on Friday, and then Lamar's out, and they're screwed too. So, like, I get why people are aggravated. I don't care personally. Like, you and I are up to the minute on this. So, like, as soon as we see him ruled out, like, we're changing the way we thought anyway. And I was a dodo who bet the Bears on the money line at the worst possible number because I'm like, the Ravens would show me nothing with Jackson out. That defense stinks. I would anticipate that the Bears would be able to win this game, and it's a totally different bet now with Huntley playing. And, of course, the Ravens put together their best game of the whole season. So, it didn't bother me. I have nothing on Thursday. I have a hard time envisioning the Dolphins playing two competent games in a row. That's really my big thing. But, boy, that feels like a lot of points to be getting on the road, short week. Lamar, historically, other than that game when they played the Brian Flores debacle team to open the season in 2019, Baltimore's had their problems down there through the years, other than that game. So I'm not saying they're going to lose. I don't think they're that good, even with getting Jackson back. That feels like a lot of points. But, man, Miami legitimately played the best game they possibly could have this past week, and now you're asking them to play well again. And we don't know what the hell's wrong with Tua's eyes still. So, I think that's a classic Thursday night. Yeah, I'll just wait till Saturday and Sunday to make my bets here.
So it sounds like I know what direction you're headed, but I'll ask anyway. I've been talking about, or a few weeks ago, I suggested Baltimore plus 375 to miss the playoffs. Steelers plus 250 to win the division. That being said, boy, hard to like what you've seen from the Steelers. The Ravens' schedule is pretty favorable coming up. If you played that, you can come back. Ravens minus 122 to make the playoffs. Ravens 11-1 to win the conference. Are any of these appetizing to you? Who do you think wins the North?
Can we just get rid of the bid for the division at this point? And all
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Browns are going nowhere. I mean, Look, Cincinnati's terrible, but Jesus Christ, you give up 23 points in the fourth quarter to the Jets and blow that game. Like, oh, my God. The Jet offense that legitimately was as bad of a Jet offense the last 2 weeks as I've seen. And like, we've seen Chris Streveler, Zach, like, all these horrible quarterbacks play for the Jets in the last 2 weeks are as bad as it was. And then if Cincinnati had found a way to just hold, I would say the Bengals are the bet to make right now, because I don't want to be laying a price with Baltimore or taking a short price with the Ravens. And the Steelers are now every bit as bad as I thought they were going to be going into the year. But I don't know. I don't know, Will. I think it just stay the hell away. I don't want anything to do with Baltimore long term. I don't trust their defense against the high-end teams.
Life on the line. Who wins the division?
If you made me pick who's winning the division, I would pick Baltimore. Because their schedule the next month is a joke. So, like,
Wouldn't you take that a step further and say, hey, you get in the playoffs, you get a home game.
Yeah, all right. So they could beat the Chargers, or who are, well, actually, Chargers probably aren't getting the 5 seed. So you beat whoever the 5 seed is, assuming it's not Kansas City, okay? But that's the issue now, right? Like we have a totally different looking playoff picture than any of us could have imagined in the AFC. Like, New England's got a legitimate shot to win the AFC East now. Like, and you can make an argument that they're going to because of the head-to-head win on the road to Buffalo. Kansas City winning the West is not a sure thing at this point. Like the Ravens could end up playing Buffalo or Kansas City as the 4 seed in the 4-5, which then totally changes the way that we all looked at this, right? Like, so as I'm saying this, like, Baltimore historically has played Buffalo great at home. They just haven't played them well in Western New York. Hasn't matter where they play Kansas City, they always seemingly lose to them. But, like, there is an arc. Look, I don't trust their defense to win 3 games in a row in the postseason more so than anything. So I wouldn't bet it. But there's an argument they could get to the AFC title game. Like, you beat Buffalo, you catch Indy. Like, if Indy were to get the 1 seed, which I think is pretty likely at this point, soft schedule, mediocre division, you beat KC head to head, you got a real shot. Like, Baltimore beating Indy in a playoff game wouldn't stun me. Like,
that's my next question. I'll ask you right now, if Baltimore in Indianapolis playoff game, who would you pick this weekend?
If I picked today, I would take the Colts, because I don't think the Ravens defense at the current moment is capable of stopping them. But man, they could look a hell of a lot differently in 2 months. And at some point, you have to imagine the league will figure out this in the offense a little bit. Jonathan, to change the subject real quick, because you just brought up the Colts. If I had an MVP vote, I'd vote Jonathan Taylor right now. I wouldn't even hesitate. Because part of the reason Daniel Jones is as successful as he is because Jonathan Taylor is having an epic season right now, Will. This year is every bit as good as the peak Derrick Henry years. This is every bit as good as the Adrian Peterson MVP year. Like, he's my vote at the current moment. And look, for Baltimore in the playoff spot, like, you'd be so honed in. It'd be so interesting to see what that line is a few weeks, like 10 weeks from now, Will. Like, if Baltimore gets their act together, Indy gets the 1 seed, I'd be fascinated to see what the line would be on a potential Colt Baltimore playoff game in Indianapolis, which is what it would almost assuredly be at this point.
Feels like every 2 weeks there's a new guy for MVP. There was the Baker Mayfield time. Allen was even money. It feels like we go through these little waves during the season.
Sure.
Right, it's
every year. Like, would it shock you if, like, in 3 weeks we're talking about Matthew Stafford as the MVP favorite?
No.
Not at all.
Absolutely not.
Like, that's what it is. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all if Patrick Mahomes ends up winning the MVP again, Will. Like, Kansas City's offense since getting Rashee Rice back is a totally different animal. Like, if you're making me pick today who's winning the Super Bowl, I'm picking the Chiefs. Like, that's my pick right now. Like, I know it's boring. I know no one wants to hear that, but their defense, you know, when they get to the playoffs, their defense will be in order because Spags will have them in order. And that offense, this is as good of an offense as they've had. This offense now, look, they still lack a running game, which, whatever, they'll figure it out. But now that all their receiving weapons are healthy and not suspended anymore, this is an elite offense again. This might be the best offense in the AFC. So, like, if you're making me pick at the current moment, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are winning the Super Bowl at the current moment, Will. And I have no idea who's coming out of the NFC. No clue.
What you like anything in college this week?
Not really. The only thing that I would look to do is I don't think Vandy's anywhere near as good as everyone says they are. Like, Pavia against the two real defenses he's played this year has really struggled. Like, Mizzou did everything in their power to lose that game last week, and they did. And the Alabama game, like, Vanderbilt outplayed them, but Pavia made two critical mistakes in that game. So, Texas, look, I don't think Texas is good enough to win out. They're not. But, man, that win they got in Starkville, that's the type of win where that can spark a run for a team that's got that much talent. I know Arch got concussed, so I know that's a question going into this week. But, I mean, look, that is – I would only look to Tech. That's probably, the big marquee games this week. That's the one that I have a feeling that every square bettor is going to be on Vanderbilt money line. And I just don't see it on the road. I don't see them going on the road and beating Texas, even with the problems that the Horns have had this year. That's for the big games. That's the one I would look at, Will.
What's the most fascinating college football playoff scenario to you? And do you have a sleeper team to make it a team that maybe can get in that not a lot of people are talking about?
I don't know if the ACC is really the whole key to the whole thing at this point, Will, because there's a real scenario where Miami doesn't play in the ACC title game now. And I don't know how good Georgia Tech is. I think they're good. I don't think they're high end. I think they're probably between the 15th and the 20th best team in the country, like somewhere in that pocket. Like, they're good, but they're not really a threat. I think Virginia has been the most epic luck box we've ever seen. Not ever, because there have been some pretty epic luck boxes, a.k.a. TCU 2 years ago, which still might be the best luck box ever. But this Virginia team, how many freaking games are going to win in overtime? Like, it's ridiculous at this point. But if you end up like Narduzzi's Pitt team that I don't think is any good as four, like, freaking Pitt lost to West Virginia, who sucks, and they're 4-1 in conference. They get Miami at home. I'm still not convinced, even with the win in Miami, I'm still not convinced Louisville's that good. Like, I'm really not. But all these teams are alive in the ACC. So we could get some we could end up in a scenario where we get three ACC teams, Will. Like, there's a scenario where that happens, where Miami goes 11-1, doesn't play in the ACC title game. Georgia Tech beats Georgia after running the table in the ACC, is 12-0 in the ACC title game, and then loses to anyone who makes it that isn't Miami. And then all of a sudden, the ACC, which I think is pretty clearly the worst of the four power conference leagues, I know some will say the Big 12, but I think the Big 12 is better, ends up with three. And then you end up with, all right, how can we put Notre Dame in this scenario? Like, you could end up with Notre Dame missing the playoff at 10-2 with a 3-point loss to Miami, who's a playoff team, and a 1-point loss to Texas A&M, who might get the one seed at this rate. So
I got to see it to believe it. I got to see that to believe that. They were 10-2 off a 10-game
winning streak.
I know,
but like, Will,
I
like,
just don't think. Will, if the I know what you mean, though.
If the ACC getting three, which I don't think happens, but the scenario I just brought up to you is very much plausible here. That really, like, all right, realistically speaking, Will, the only two teams that I think are a surefire lock for the college football playoff right now are the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Indiana Hoosiers. Those are the only two teams that I like. Ohio State at worst is going 11-1 at this point, at worst in the regular season. At worst, 11-1. Indiana, at worst, 11-1 in the regular season. Meeting in the Big Ten title game in Indianapolis, winner of that 12-1, Lizard at 11-2. They're both in. They're the only two teams that I think are surefire locks at this current moment. We could end up with, I really think this would have been the year that we get five SEC teams, but if the ACC gets three, then they're going to be SEC teams that should get in to get left out. Like the Big 12, is completely screwed because I think Texas Tech and BYU are like playoff caliber teams. I don't see a scenario where the Big 12 gets two, period. Unless if BYU runs the table, they play Texas Tech in Arlington, and Texas Tech beats them by like three, and they're both 12-1. That's like the only scenario. And I don't think BYU is good enough to run the table. I think they're going to get tripped up. It's just a matter. They'll probably lose to Texas Tech when they play each other in a few weeks. So, Craze, there are some really outlandish things that could happen right now. I think Louisville is probably the team to look for, though, because they have the win over Miami. That win over James Madison in week two looks a hell of a lot better now. That JMU looks like a team that could very easily get the group of five bid if the American teams start cannibalizing themselves. And Louisville schedule the rest of the way. I mean, they could absolutely win out. So they would need Virginia to lose twice to get to the ACC title game. But we'll see. I know it's a long-winded answer, man, but the ACC is really the key to the whole puzzle here. And I think for the sake of the quality of the playoff, the ACC hopefully does not get more than just Miami and maybe Georgia Tech at this point in the college football playoff.
Louisville plus 245 to make it. That was a terrible loss, by the way. South Florida, who I thought was going to be the team all along. That was a horrible loss by Memphis. Up 14 in the fourth quarter. You can't lose that.
It was a great win for my bank account, for my betting accounts, because I had Memphis and it was totally the wrong side, but we got it.
So it sounds like you think James Madison at plus 570 to make it is a good bet.
There's going to be one American team that gets through at either 11-2 or 12-1, and that team is going to get in over James Madison.
I'll throw one more quirky one. We'll get you out of here. I mentioned this the other day. Houston only has one loss. If you look at the rest of their schedule, West Virginia, Central Florida, Baylor, TCU, it's not impossible. Now, at one loss, they probably need to win the Big 12 title game. Is there a path in your mind for Houston, who's 20-1? To win the Big 12, 15-1 to get in. Do either of those appetize you?
I don't mind that 20-1 because I think I'm with you. That's the only path there. Here's the problem they have, and this is kind of the problem with the whole Big 12, because that Texas Tech Arizona State game, it kind of just felt like a sleepy spot for Texas Tech. And I mean, Arizona State's done now, and it looks like Levitt's like not even remotely healthy. So, I mean, Jeff Sims had to be the one who tried to get that kid back in a game last weekend in that late night game in that loss to Houston. I would rather have the 20-1 and the 15-1. I think their only path is to win the Big 12 title game, but they need help. Like they need help. Like they need BYU to beat Texas Tech in order to get to the Big 12 title game. And if Houston wins out and they're 11-1, committee's not putting 11-1 Houston in over any 10-2 SEC team. Like, there's no way.
No, I would agree.
There's no way. Agree. And nor should they. Like, Houston's significantly worse than all those teams that are capable of going 10-2 in the SEC. The only one that I'm not sure of is Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma's losing to Tennessee this week and they're completely done. Talk about getting exposed quickly. Well, they got exposed quickly once they started playing real teams. Not surprising at all. I thought the Mateer hype at the beginning of the year was nonsense, and I think Venables is a clown as a head coach. So there you go.
I'm with you. I like Tennessee this week. Jeff, appreciate it, man. Where can we find you?
Yeah, Jeff Parles on the tweets. See me on ESPN Las Vegas. See me in some other spots moving forward as well, Will.
Appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely.
Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Jeff Parles. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back Friday. See you then.